allowing you to have much greater control of your body. Mm-hmm. Things like gymnastics and swimming, mm-hmm, and yeah, martial arts. Yeah. These are sports that perhaps are better than football.
Yeah.
But having said that, football is still a sport.
Yeah, but in general, you know, every sport, they have got, you know, some sort of injuries.
Definitely. Every sport has its own stake of injuries.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's another discussion for us. Sports is very good. Children should do a lot of football for sure. And it's a good sport. It's a team sport. Requires social interaction, requires mm-hmm. skills, requires strength. It's really good. So definitely encourage children to play. If it means that at home, they're just kicking the ball all day long mm-hmm. and yeah. they go in the garden and mm-hmm. just kick the ball here and there, that's also good. As long as they're letting off their energy, they're yeah. keeping busy, they're learning new skills,
mm.
it's fine to some extent. So mm. I wouldn't discourage that too much.
But what the question says is all day long.
I'm sure they don't mean all day long in terms of exaggerated. If it is the case, then definitely mm. it needs to have a timetable, right? We've yeah. talked about balanced life, we talked about having a timetable,
mm.
especially when a child turns 7, 8 year old, then with school homework and with madrasa and Sunday school and with mosque programs and with slowly, slowly starting to learn how to pray and fast, then we should definitely have a timetable and slowly, slowly teach a child that you can kick a ball around, but it needs to be at a particular time.
Yeah.
I need to tackle your other responsibilities mm-hmm. as well. But let's assume this child, for example, does his homework,
yeah.
Goes to madrasa, but between two homeworks, for example, he mm-hmm. just likes to kick a ball, or whilst he's waiting for something to happen,
mm-hmm.
whether dad to come back home or for a meal to come, just kicks a ball in there. That's perfectly fine. It's very normal.
Yeah, that's right. And we'll continue after a short break. So, dear audience, stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hey, stop! I got a better game!
IRIB English Radio presents a priceless gift to parents. Do you have problem with your kids?
I have two boys. One is 5 year old and the other one is 3 and a half. And they constantly fight and wrestle with each other, and it often gets to a dangerous stage.
My 18-month-old daughter has learned to eat by herself, and she just refuses that I feed her. But usually, all the food basically goes everywhere except her mouth. So how can we allow this strife to happen for the purpose of freedom?
Don't worry. We're here to help.
For a child, the purpose of the food is only to feed. It's also for him to learn. It's also for him to explore and fulfill the need of curiosity, fulfill the need of freedom.
Islamic upbringing. Contact us. EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners, and we're discussing about children being obsessed about sports or football. So, Brother McDowell, please continue.
Yeah, so if it comes to playing football and sports, definitely encourage it.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good for children to be active.
Yeah.
I emphasize this point because I know in today's world, it's very easy to fall into the trap of video games and TV and tablet and mobile yeah. phone and laptops and everything. As much as we should encourage our children to get their eyes off the screen and get active. It mm-hmm. means kicking a ball every 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, make sure that it doesn't destroy things in the house.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely encourage sports a lot.
But until that, it shouldn't, you know, disturb their daily routine, the things that they should be doing, like, you know, studying and all.
Definitely.
Doing their homework.
After the age of 7, 8, as they've started school and they're
yeah.
busy with other activities, definitely should not disturb that. And it shouldn't become an obsession,
mm-hmm.
right? An obsession in the sense that it's destructive towards other works that they have.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
No. If it's like that, then definitely it needs to be controlled. But if it's not destructive, if it's just a way to pass a few moments here and there
mm-hmm.
and to let some energy out, then that's fine. However, when it comes to watching TV,
mm-hmm.
watching football, there's a couple of things. One is that it counts as screen time
mm-hmm.
If it's watched on TV. Yeah. So again, it needs to be timetable. It needs to be balanced.
Mm-hmm.
It needs to be monitored. If it comes to going out to the stadium
mm-hmm.
and watching football, going to the stadium to watch mm-hmm. football, watch the players there, I'd like to make a small point over here, and that is that this culture of following a team,
mm-hmm.
of being a fan of a team,
yeah.
of falling in love or being crazy or being identified
yeah.
by a particular football team,
yeah. mm-hmm.
whichever that team might be, I'm not going to here support one team or yeah. the other. We need to be careful that this should not lead one to lose their mind
mm-hmm.
and lose their rationality, uh-huh. right?
You know, what happens actually is, you know, when you love one particular team, you know, it creates hatred among the other teams.
Exactly. So it shouldn't lead to
one's... Or the people loving those specific teams.
Exactly. It shouldn't lead to one's moral compass being destroyed, yeah. right? Sometimes you act in a way because you like a team.
Uh-huh.
So if you being a fan of, for example, I don't know, Liverpool,
mm-hmm.
means that you're going to be very... insulting others
yeah.
who don't support that team
mm-hmm.
or being mean to them or yeah. violent to them or arrogant towards other players yeah. or other teams or other friends, then that's a negative point,
yeah.
right? So being a fan, if it leads to that, then it needs to be controlled.
Mm-hmm.
If it leads one to be obsessed in a way that it takes away one's identity, mm-hmm. right? Sometimes children, they like football teams, they like supporting a team, well and good. But if it means that now I identify myself as a supporter of that team,
uh-huh.
and my life rotates around that whatever I do is for that team,
mm-hmm.
A kind of identity that loses one's identity, you know, so mm-hmm. many youths nowadays, they don't know who they are, they don't know what yeah. their values and their principles mm. and even their goals are in life, because mm. all they think of is this football identity that they have,
yeah.
and their values and principles are defined
mm-hmm.
by this football team. This again is negative.
That's an interesting point, actually, and let's continue after a short break. So, dear audience, stay tuned.
Imam Kadhim alayhi salam said, "It is a recommended practice for a child to play in his childhood so that he becomes patient in his adulthood."
Welcome back, dear listeners, and we're discussing about the culture of following a particular team and how people lose their identity. You know, they just identify themselves as a supporter of a particular team. So, Brother Mahdad, please carry on.
So this concept of identity, we've again talked about it in previous shows as well. It's very important that our identity remains a Muslim identity,
uh-huh.
right?
True.
Our values and principles and how we think, mm-hmm. what we count as good, what makes us happy, what makes us sad, what makes yeah. us angry, what we believe to be true, what we believe to be counted as success,
yeah.
is all defined by Islam,
yeah.
The reality out there.
Mm-hmm.
And so we shouldn't become drunk by this fever or this atmosphere of mm-hmm. being a fan of a particular team.
Yeah.
Now, so therefore, I don't encourage parents to enforce it. I know some parents, sometimes they really want their child to pick a team or
yeah.
become a fan of a particular team. I wouldn't encourage that so much.
Yeah.
At the same time, obviously, it's natural, especially in the world that we live mm-hmm. today, you have to be following a particular team or being mm-hmm. a fan of a particular team. And this happens naturally mm-hmm. when yeah. you're at school. So, it needs to be balanced. Parents yeah. need to be in control of the situation. They shouldn't go into it so much
yeah.
that you lose your child into this identity.
Mm-hmm.
And they behave and according to that, and their values and morals and principles are based according to that.
Yeah.
So you allow it to happen, but in a very mild way. And this is done through encouraging other things as well. There's mm-hmm. other sports out there. This is why we need to evolve our children into other sports as well, not just football.
Yeah.
We talk about martial arts, we talk about swimming, we talk about other sports. Getting them involved with other activities as well.
Yeah.
There's activities out there that are very interesting, are very skillful, that mm-hmm. children can get involved in, and to help them see that there's a bigger world out there mm-hmm. than just football.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we get drowned into this football atmosphere and we forget that there's a world out there.
Like, you know, having the question asked in my mind, so, you know, if they observe that, you know, the child is really obsessed to football, and if they observe that he's really good at it, so do you suggest them, you know, to push him forward in that field, like, so that he becomes an athlete?
I wouldn't say yes or no over here. It uh-huh. depends on different circumstances. But
like, he's really good at football.
Let's say he's really good at football. I wouldn't say no to it, definitely. Mm-hmm. However, remember that this comes at costs. And if this cost means one's religion, then definitely no.
Mm-hmm.
I know, for example, if you're in countries like in the UK, for example,
uh-huh.
right? And if you're so good that you've been picked up by a Division team, 3 yeah. team or even a Division 1 team,
yeah.
all right, by some scouts, we have to be careful because it involves a whole culture out there that...
against Islam.
That is against Islam, right? And we have to be careful of that. However, if you think your child is able to, let's say your 12-year-old, your 14-year-old is actually... I'm quite strong in his religion and he's able to, although it's a risk to take, and you're there to support, then why not? Athleticism and being a football player as a career is not a bad career to have as such, right? But it needs to have the support of the family, support of the community, and it needs to come with a realization that what this means, an entire culture that's very different from an Islamic culture. And if we're able to navigate through this culture without being drowned into it, then yes. But it's risky and it's difficult.
Thank you so much to your audience for staying with us. And if you have any questions, comments or suggestions, please contact us at our email, englishradio@irib.ir, and visit us at our website, parstoday.com. Until another program, fi amanullah.
Islam solves all of its problems. Allah leaves no stone unturned. Perfect with no flaws at all are the laws of Allah. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
علم فقه از علوم شریفه اسلامی.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
Self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters in faith. Welcome to the program, Ulama Speech. In today's program, we're going to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Ayatollah Misbah Yazdi. Please stay tuned.
ما انقلاب کردیم یه شرایط خاصی بود یه حکومت استبدادی حاکم بود دست نشونده خارجی ها بود همه قدرت ها متمرکز بود در قدرت ارتش و اختیارش هم با یک شخص
When we started the revolution it was under certain circumstances a dictatorial government was in control the government was in the hands of foreigners power was centralized in the army and they were under the control of one person That is the Shah. and his supporters were all foreign governments. Today, it isn't like that. The Pahlavi system broke down. It is gone. So it isn't necessary anymore to support that revolution which came forth due to those circumstances. This manifesto of Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei was released so that on the one hand, we hand over the inheritance of the past to the new generation so that they understand what this Islamic revolution did. Some in the young generation think, oh, some scholars came forth and they did some stuff, whether it was right or wrong. Well, it's over with now. This isn't the issue at hand. Or some think that the revolution is a phenomenon. It has expiration date, which has arrived. So let it die. We must say, no, this revolution is eternal. It is quite possible that it will last forever. This is a point which must be seriously supported and explained. This theory, which suggests that every revolution dies out, is incorrect. It isn't like that. Economic and materialistic revolutions in certain circumstances, with certain preferences, came into being and then ended because the factors changed. The Islamic revolution isn't like this. Unfortunately, we Muslims, even those who should have been at the forefront of this issue, research it and explain to the people, have themselves become stuck in this negligence. Thank you so much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of Ulama Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Ayatollah Misbah Yazdi. Until next time, we leave you in Allah's care.
Face-to-face.
Hello and welcome to this edition of Face-to-Face. I'm Humane Abedi, and in this program, I'm going to have an interview with Iran's energy minister, Dr. Reza Ardakhanian, who is here with us to share his thought with us. Dr. Ardakhanian, thank you very much for accepting invitation. As the first question, please explain in general about the achievements of your ministry, especially after the victory of the Islamic Revolution back in 1979 in the field of water and electricity supply to remote areas of the country.
Thank you very much for inviting me, and it's a pleasure to be with you. Ministry of Energy in Iran is in charge of water and electricity. In general, means thermal power plants, hydropower plants, and renewable energy. And when it comes to the water, it's about constructing and managing large dams, as well as irrigation and drainage networks. Also distributing water for different sectors, for domestic, in urban and rural areas, also for agriculture, for industries, and providing water for environmental protection. My ministry also collects wastewater and try to treat them and reusing treated wastewater. So all in all, this ministry deals with each and everyone in the country, in urban areas, in rural areas, and day and night we have to provide enough safe and clean and secure water as well as electricity for the whole population. 42 years ago, when Islamic Revolution came on stage and we started to serving our people in different way, that time the installed capacity in terms of power plants was just about 7,000 megawatts in the country. And nowadays, while population is 2.3 times, the installed capacity of power plants is about 12 times than that time. So it means that we have achieved a good level of progress as well as facilities, not only for domestic purposes, but also for development of the country in different area, because of the role of energy as an infrastructure. Also, we have started recently working on renewable energies in terms of wind and solar. For sure, 42 years ago, it was zero. And now we have about 870 megawatts of solar and wind renewable energy. And in terms of hydro, also we have established many large dams with hydropower facilities, and I think it's more than 12,000 megawatts, while this number was less than 2,000 40 years ago. This has provided us a good infrastructure in the country. And also in terms of water, if we look at the statistics worldwide, this time in the urban areas, the coverage in the world is about 96%. For electricity in Iran is 100%. And in rural areas, for electricity, the coverage worldwide is about 79%, in Iran is 99.7%. So it means almost each and everyone in the country has access to electricity. When it comes to the water, the situation even is more brighter. Mm-hmm. And I may say 42 years ago, we had just four wastewater treatment plants in the country located in four major cities. And none of them was able to cover the whole city. And it I think less than 2 million population were covered by wastewater treatment plants. Just a few days ago, our president inaugurated, among many other projects, one of the high-tech wastewater treatment plant in Kurdistan province in Kamyaran. And it was number 246, means that we have designed and constructed and operated 242 wastewater treatment plant during these 4 decades. But most of the progress came during the last 7-8 years. And now we are in the position of reporting that every month we are inaugurating one wastewater treatment plant. Every 2 months we are inaugurating one water treatment plant. And every 50 days, less than a month, during the last 7 years, we have inaugurated and operated a new large dams. So this means that Iran is in a good shape in terms of infrastructure for water and electricity.
Thank you very much, and thank you for your thorough answer. Would you please tell us more about the progress of the Ministry of Energy in recent years in terms of export of energy, especially, I mean, electricity to other countries?
So when we have established power plants 12 times than it was 40 years ago, while the population has been increased just less than 2.5 times, it means that we have invested a lot for the network. So we are in a good location in terms of geography. We have good connection with all neighboring countries. I may say from southeast with Pakistan, then Afghanistan, Turkmenistan, Armenia, Azerbaijan, Turkey, Iraq, which with each and every neighboring countries, we have electricity connection. Exporting, importing, it depends on the time of the year. In some cases, we are just exporter. In some cases, we have transaction of energy in different months of the year. And we think that in the near future, we may also bring renewable energy in this network to be exported to the neighboring countries. We have announced to all investors in private sector that we provide them permission and access to our network that they export their own, say, electricity generated by wind towers and solar panels to the neighboring countries based on the contracts they sign with them. So I think right now we are in a good shape. If ourselves do not need electricity, we can, I mean, provide it to neighboring countries. And in some cases, we are importing when we need them.
Thank you. Today we are witnessing the export of technical knowledge of Iranian specialists abroad. Can you please elaborate that in which countries we have implemented or we are implementing projects both independently or jointly with other countries?
Look, in the world, usually they remember Iran as a country with major sources of oil and gas as the source of wealth in this country. But in reality, our major wealth is our human resources. And if we utilize this source in a right way in terms of education, training, and using human resources in the right places, I think we are good enough not only to respond to the needs of our country, but also we may have a major role in development and progress of the region. As you mentioned, many Iranian contractors and consulting engineers right now are active in the region, even outside our region. They are working in Africa, and they are winning the bids for major projects in terms of designing and building large dams, hydropower plants, thermal power plants. It's now, I believe, 6 years consecutively that Ministry of Energy of Iran means that water and electricity sector in Iran is in the first place in terms of exporting technical services and engineering services worldwide. So we have thousands of companies now are active in building equipments in energy sector, and many companies both in consulting engineering area as well as contractors working on large dams, on designing and constructing water and wastewater treatment plants. This is another source for employment and also for a good level of friendship and connection, especially with the neighboring countries.
Can you please tell us the name of some of these countries that currently Iran is implementing?
So we have worked and we are working in Iraq, mainly in the energy sector, while also in other part of development in Iran. In Iraq, Iranian companies are active. Minister of Energy now, based on the decision of the Iranian government, is in charge of joint economic commission between Iran and different countries. I myself am in charge with Iraq, with Armenia, Russian Federation, Afghanistan, Tajikistan, as well as state of Qatar in the region, and some other countries like Sri Lanka outside of our region. So in Iraq, we have major projects, mainly in the energy sector, but also in other part, in construction of sport fields, as well as dam construction. In Tajikistan, we have constructed hydropower plants, also working on the road construction and connecting different parts of the countries in terms of using TBMs for tunnel projects. In Sri Lanka, the Iranian companies have designed and constructed and operated a major hydropower plants. Soon will be officially inaugurated by officials of both countries. In Africa, many Iranian private sector companies are active in different projects.
Very well. Dr. Ardakhanian, many say that the world's future war would be over water. And in face of water scarcity across the globe, what are the energy ministry's mechanisms to cope with this issue?
If many say and talk about war on the water, so it means that not all the people, and some of them do not talk about the war, and I am among those people who are not a believer in the war on the water. And instead, I think that those people who are talking about the war on the water in the future, they are somehow paving the way for some potential conflicts. And they want to normalize this issue of conflicts on the water. Then they go for fishing themselves out of these potential conflicts. But regardless of this argument, Iran is in a very unique situation worldwide in terms of shared water and inter-boundary basin issues. We have many countries in the world that they are in living in the inter-boundary basins in terms of water and sharing water with their neighboring countries. But they all are either upstreamer or downstreamer. If they are downstreamer, like, for example, in MENA region, like a big country like Egypt, they know what to do as a downstreamer, right? And this position affects on different area in terms of even engineering, mathematical modeling, and so on. And some countries are upstreamer, and they know how to deal with the issue. But Iran is a country that is upstreamer, at the same time is a downstreamer. In the east part of the country, we are in the downstream of interboundary basin with our neighbors, Afghanistan. In the west part of the country, we are in the upstream of the basin with our neighbor Iraq. Also, we have shared rivers in the north, northeast, northwest. We have Harirud River with Turkmenistan. We have Aras River with Armenia and Azerbaijan. So it means that Iran is in a very unique situation in terms of dealing with different aspects of the shared water and living in the interboundary basin. Is this a challenge? Yes. But also it's an opportunity. And if we do things in a correct way, if we rely on water scarcity as a source of being closer and closer and working on it as an opportunity for friendship and cooperation, then we come to the point to say that either scarcity of water or somehow droughts and this kind of climate situation is not in a source of being worried when it comes to dealing with the neighboring countries. We can open new chapters and working with our neighbors to share benefits and cost of water. We can look at the water as a source of cooperation. When we have flood, when we are facing droughts, both of them can be used as the reasons to work closer with the neighboring areas. So recently we have started to establish a national center for shared water and interboundary basin issues to, improve the level of cooperation, first of all, at the national level between different ministries and authorities, and then going to our neighboring countries and offering many different projects for cooperation. So in the long run, I think we can take advantage of water scarcity in our region to work closely with our neighboring countries and share whatever of the knowledge and experience and technical expertise that we have with our neighbors. And I think it will help us to overcome the negative aspect of water scarcity. So all in all, I do not believe in war on water.
And are all of our neighbors willing to cooperate in this regard?
When it comes to development, we should know that the main aspects of development is the human resources development. Building dams, power plants, road, and other facilities and infrastructures alone is not the sign of development. The major and main development aspects in the mind of the people. That's why that right now in the world they do not divide the regions or the countries to developed and developing. And they talk about the people. Either I am a developed citizen worldwide or I am a developing. So we have to invest and work more on education and training. And I'm sure that in our region with lots of cultural connection that we have with our neighbors, we can build upon that bridge and work together. I may say that we have good sign of interest from our neighboring countries working together, and so the people should not be worried about that.
I do really appreciate your full comments, Dr. Adakanyan, and I wish you all the best in your career.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for this edition of Face to Face. I'm Humayun Abedi.
تمام ارزش ها و صفاتی که انسان احترام میگذاره، همه این ارزش ها در علی ابن ابی طالب جمعه.
Human in general, whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. The program's To My Brother, and I'm your host, Mehdi. We're talking about the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Please stay with us. Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being, a brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time.
Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters in faith. Welcome to this segment of To My Brother, I'm Muhammad. And today, I'm going to read to you an aphorism of Imam Ali from Nahjul Balagha. Before that, let's go ahead and listen to the Arabic words, and after that, I'm going to read you the English translation. Stay with us.
قال أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام إن هذه القلوب تمل كما تمل الأبدان فابتغوا لها طرائف الحكمة.
Amir al-Mu'mineen, Ali alayhi salam, said, "The hearts become tired as the bodies become tired. You should therefore search for beautiful sayings for them to enjoy by way of refreshment."
Welcome back, dear friends. It's a blessing to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio, the programs to my brother, and we were discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali, alayhi salam. One of the great things which we learn, dear friends, from the commander of the faithful Imam Ali, Ibn Abi Talib, alayhi salam, is that we must be very careful when we make judgments. Now, one of the judgments which was passed by Imam Ali is regarding two women who had a dispute over a child, where each of these two women claimed that the child belonged to her. Meaning one lady said, "This is my child," and the other lady said, "No, this is my child." So these two women came to Imam Ali, peace and blessings upon him, to ask Imam Ali to find a solution to this issue. Imam Ali, peace and blessings upon him, first advised each of these women to give up their baseless and false claim. But both of them continued to insist on what they were saying, believing that the other party's claim was false. And so to resolve this problem, Imam Ali, alayhi salam, ordered Qambar, one of his companions and his servants, to bring him his sword. The two women said, "What is this sword for?" Imam Ali calmly replied, "I will cut the child into two parts and give half of the child to each of you." At this point, one of the two women cried out, saying, "Ya Amir al-Mu'mineen, O Commander of the Faithful, if you are supposed to cut the child into two parts, I will give up my claim. Give the child to this other woman." Imam Ali alayhi salam found that the child actually belonged to this woman who was willing to give up the child, and that the other woman who remained quiet, her claim was false. And so Imam Ali gave the child to the true mother, and the other woman whose claim was false took back her word and confessed the truth. Dear friends, we must always be very careful and very intelligent and very thorough when making judgments. And of course, we must rely on the help of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in order to be able to pass judgments which are worthy of the satisfaction, pleasure, and acceptance of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. A beautiful lesson brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. And now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Ali Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, about the personality of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
تمام ارزش ها و صفاتی که انسان چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به اسلام چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به هر دینی
human in general whether a muslim non-muslim or even a disbeliever respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib this means Ali ibn Abi Talib is a global character who is respected by Sunnis, Shias, and even non-Muslims. Everyone, even the faithless people, respect Imam Ali and his personal values.
كل صبح وكل
تشرب أيام تبقى عيني بدمع مشتاق قد لسعت حية الهوى كبدي فلا تبي ولها ولا راغي
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم إني أسألك الأمان يوم لا ينفع مال ولا بنون إلا من أتى الله بقلب سليم.
O Allah, I ask you for the protection of the day when property will not avail, nor sons except he who comes with a heart free from evil.
وأسألك الأمان يوم يعض الظالم على يدي يقول يا ليتني اتخذت مع الرسول سبيلا.
And I ask you for protection on the day when the unjust one will bite his hands, saying, Oh, would that I had taken away with the messenger. And I ask you for protection on the day when the guilty shall be recognized by their marks, so they shall be seized by the forelocks and the feet. And I ask you for protection on the day when a father shall not give any satisfaction for his son, nor shall the child give any satisfaction for his father. Surely the promise of Allah is true.
IRIB English Radio. You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Now we invite you to listen to Brother Hassanain Rajabali.
When Allah says, Ala bi dhikrillahi tatma'innul qulub, dhikrillah is this. When you remember Ahlul Bayt, when you remember the Messenger, when you remember Allah, you find that your heart wants to get closer to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. You find that Imam Ali alayhi salam was hated, loved and hated. Shaheed Mutahhari has written an excellent book. He says, polarization around the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib. He's a character that brought people towards him, and he's a man who repulsed people. There were two sides to him. In other words, two sides in the sense that of people. One hated him passionately, and one loved him to the point of giving anything. They could give their whole lives to him. You find the lovers of Ahlul Bayt today, the lovers of Amir al-Mu'mineen today, are proving themselves. Today, they are the best resistors of any form of oppression. They have meager armaments. They are neighbors of vicious people. Yet they defend the truth. They are fighters. They defend justice. They don't allow injustice. They don't allow oppression. They don't allow their lands to be occupied. They don't allow themselves to be made slaves. They don't allow themselves to be fooled. Why? Because Imam Ali alayhi salam has taught us that if you follow my way, as Allah says, that if you follow this one, then you are of that successful one. You are the one who is the winner. This is a clear command. Imam Ali alayhi salam's character, briefly, and what a gift of Allah that Allah has planted this love of Ahlul Bayt in their hearts. That as lost as they may be, in the nightclubs they may be hanging, salah they may not be doing, they may not be showing to these kinds of gatherings, but it's dormant. It's for you and I to go and get them through the love of Ahlul Bayt. And I'm telling you, it's there because humans love the best examples. Imam Ali alayhi salam is that kind of an example where he never made a person feel bad. His wisdom was beyond comprehension. When he would answer complex mathematical answers, people were stunned. Even the second caliph, he says, how come you answer so quickly? He's asking the second caliph, what is one, how many are these? He says, two. Imam says, how come you don't waste time in answering this? He says, that's how I see. When you ask me such question, when he says, saluni, saluni, qabla an tafqiduni, ask me, before you miss me. Why did he say that? Because he has already been endowed with this wisdom. He has been endowed with this knowledge for you and I to follow. But he's just not a man of wisdom. He's a man of action.
Listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
With IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
The first type of right that Imam Sajjad alayhi salam speaks about in his treatise is the right of God, the right of Allah, Haqqullah.
For humanity, a commentary on Risalatul Huquq of Imam Sajjad alayhi salam.
By Hujjatul Islam, Zayd As-Salam.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wa salatu wa salamu ala Sayyidina Muhammad wa alihi tahirin. Welcome, dear listeners, to IRIB English Radio and another program for humanity where we are discussing the treaties of rights of Imam Ali As-Sajjad Zain al-Abidin, peace be upon him. We're talking about the rights of the adversary and someone who has a claim against you, and how do you deal with this particular individual who has a claim against you? We've discussed this in detail so far, and we've spoken about if the claim is valid or if the claim is invalid, what it is that you need to do. If the claim is true, then of course you need to be against yourself. You know, you need to make sure that you are someone who is truthful, someone who is honest, someone who implements this kind of